Hello and welcome to Monster Deer Monster Presents, a not monster exploration podcast. It's actually a side guest cast where we'll be taking a look at things that are not monster related, but don't quite fit into the main podcast. So each of these episodes, I will be talking with a few guests about a particular topic that we are collectively interested in, and we're kicking that off with Jackie Chan's Police Story from 1985. We're going to be going through the entirety of the Police Story franchise and some of the spinoffs and just kind of have fun with it. I am joined today by Josh and Alex. Josh, how are you doing?
I am doing fantastic, and I am ready to discuss the theme song to the movie we're talking about for conservatively 4 hours.
We can do that. Jackie loves his theme songs. Canto pop star. So good. And Alex, how are you doing?
Hey there. I'm doing good. I am, maybe not monster related, but we've got some stunt monsters to discuss. No,
for sure. They put in the hard work to make these films, and we get to see that always in like the little outtakes. And then just as you like bone crunchingly wince watching the stunts in this movie, there's a lot where I'm like, oh, that's real people.
Yeah.
It's been a minute since I, watched one of these. So this is a Hong Kong film, and it has some Taiwanese co-production. Just because it has Bridget Lin, who is a Taiwanese star, pop star. And then Jackie Chan, of course. So I'll start with you, Alex. What drew you to this particular movie? Is it the genre? Is it are everyone's favorite Jackie Chan, martial arts movies, cop movies? What's your thing?
It's definitely not cop movies. It's definitely more the martial arts end of it. I've always been interested in martial arts and Asian pop culture media in general. I was started very early on a fairly steady diet of 80s anime and Bruce Lee movies that was shown to me by my dad. And, it developed from there into a love of kung fu films, wuxia, anime, and of course, Jackie Chan. Because with that constellation of interests, you cannot not be into Jackie Chan, I don't think.
Mm-hmm. It definitely makes it difficult to avoid Mr. Chan in that case. And how about yourself, Josh?
So I have a long road to getting into like kung fu films and martial arts cinema in general. The earliest thing I can remember, I wouldn't classify this movie as a martial arts movie, but it's the first thing that introduced me to the world. When I was a kid, we got babysat by one of my parents, by a church friend or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And we went over to his house, and he showed us Three Ninjas. Have any of you seen the Three Ninjas movies?
I saw the first one.
I'm best friends with Rocky Colt and Tum Tum.
Wait, seriously, or are you just talking about
them? No, sorry. I don't know them personally.
Don't get my hopes up.
Oh,
Dave.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm besties with Mr. Hogan, and we went to Mega Man.
There we go.
I've seen all those movies, too. I enjoyed those.
I love those movies. Like, watching them now, they're pretty awful. I still love them more ironically and nostalgically, but that was the first time I had ever seen that type of, action in a movie. And on top of that, it was all kids doing it. So I'm like, hell yeah, this is something I could totally do, right? This is how real life works. A kid could totally knock a grown adult out with a single punch, especially a kid of that age. But it blew my mind, so that's where I first kind of was introduced to the idea of martial arts action in films. And then as I got older, I would, you know, I would see like Jackie Chan movies periodically. I heard about him. I would hear about his movies. A friend of mine was a huge fan of the Rush Hour movies. And I forget what it was. I think because I was into Power Rangers and Three Ninjas, I was always into martial arts. And so then I started seeking out actual like martial arts films, not just like ones for kids, but ones with like a serious plot or like more on the violent side than more on the comedy side. And that's when I started getting into stuff like Tony Jaa. And I think I saw, what is it? What was his big breakout movie? I'm blanking on it.
Ong Bak.
Ong Bak. Thank you. I saw that. And actually, no, I saw The Protector first.
Okay.
And then I started seeking out his other stuff. And I remember like trying to get into it. And I remember thinking for a little while, because assuming that because Jackie Chan was like the big name, I'm like, okay, well, his movies must not be like amazing, because it's like, that's the mainstream thing, you know, like the mainstream thing is never going to be as cool as something that's a little lesser known. You know, I had this real hipster mentality about it. And then I saw a video from the Angry Video Game Nerd, of all people. He did a video that wasn't game related, but it was like the top 10 Jackie Chan stunts and top 10 Jackie Chan fight scenes. And when I watched those videos, I went, holy shit, this is not what I was expecting at all. I had no concept of how crazy Jackie was in terms of doing his own stunts, in terms of his choreography, in terms of like all the stuff he put into his movies and still does, still puts into his movies. And that sent me down a rabbit hole, and I started with the movie we're talking about today, Police Story, and that it just blew me away, and it's been a love story ever since. So much so that I put this in quotations, I got to meet Jackie Chan, sort of. There was a book signing at like a bookstore like the next state over from me in New Jersey, and I actually have his book, and he signed it in front of me. Have I read this book? No, I have not. But I have it. I can see it in my game room right now. And I have to read it at some point. But yeah, I have actually seen Jackie Chan in person, which is awesome. And I will read that book at some point. But I love his movies, and I have loved them ever since.
All right. Well, maybe this will be the kick in the pants you need to crack that book.
Probably not. Got a lot of stuff on my plate.
Yeah, I know.
But I do need to.
Yeah, we definitely carved out some time to get this recording done. We have another guest moving forward. It will be Matt, and they will be here moving forward. Probably the next episode of this. There's not like a set schedule. These are just going to be bonus episodes that pop out whenever. Nothing paywalled. They'll just appear. And like I said, we're covering the entirety of Police Story, so one movie at a time. So we'll be doing this for a little while. Yeah. So I guess that will circle back to me. I think I've missed maybe five Jackie Chan. I went through his entire filmography, so I'm missing a few that I think were just tough to get. But I mean, I've been collecting and watching his movies since like the VHS days. And I would say that I don't think I started watching. I'd seen, I probably started with Bruce Lee, to be honest. And of course, Jackie Chan is in two movies with Bruce Lee. But true. I think the movies that I really decided to like watch a bunch was Barry Gordy's The Last Dragon. I love that movie. Mm-hmm. And I will need to watch it again. There's a little nearby vegan restaurant, and they have a mixed drink called the Bruce Leroy. So I like had to order it. It's like, this is going to give me the glow, the different one, not extra Kung Fu powers, but it is a good drink, by the way. But yeah, I watched that, and then I watched like Big Trouble in Little China a million times. I came eventually to Kung Fu movies, Wuxia, Chanbara, like just all of it, all of Asian martial arts cinema. I really enjoy Tony Jaa films, Iko Uwais, who's from Indonesia.
Yo, the Raid movies are nuts. Yeah. I love them.
And did you watch Meron Tau, his first film?
I've watched, I think I did. It's been a long time. I don't think I paid I wasn't paying full attention when I watched it, but I do remember watching it.
Yeah, go back and check that one out. That's still like, because it's about the journey to become like your own, he's trying to become an instructor of silat. Mm. And so he's supposed to just go to Jakarta, I think, and open a school. And then just like, it's a martial arts film. So like crime stuff happens and he has to defeat some bad guys on his path to becoming his own full-fledged instructor. It's a lot of fun. The stunt work is pretty brutal, so it feels a little bit like some of the early, like, this kind of down and dirty stuff that Jackie Chan is doing in Police Story. Because none of the stunt work, for a movie about cops which has a lot of gunplay, there's a lot of people falling off real high places and bouncing on everything on the way down.
Yep.
Yeah.
For sure.
So let's get into the movie. Alex, if you could kindly provide us with a summary of the plot of this movie.
Sure. So this film opens essentially with a raid. The cops have kind of like targeted this criminal enterprise. They try to raid it and it goes sideways.
Quickly.
Yeah, it's
almost
not
immediately.
It's not a super successful raid, I would say. Overall, the bad guy does get away, but his girlfriend does not. At which point, Jackie, through antics, basically tries to convince her to, provide evidence against her boyfriend so that they can nab them at trial, I got it wrong. I'm sorry. Let me go back. They do actually get the bad guy ultimately, don't they? At the bus chase sequence.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The big raid happens. There's a huge chase. They end up on a bus, where Jackie finally does nab the bad guy. There's a lot of Jackie getting promoted and treated as a hero or whatever, and they need the girlfriend to provide evidence in order to convict the bad guy. And they assign Jackie to protect her. He does various shenanigans to try to convince her to actually help them. Some of them are maybe not advised, I would say, but we'll get into that
questionable
later. Yeah.
Questionable is a generous term for
yeah. Meanwhile, his antics kind of intersect with what in my notes is described as Jackie's character's long suffering girlfriend May.
This poor woman
who ends up thinking that this mobster's girlfriend is like the girl that Jackie's seeing on the side, basically. There's some comedy there, but we can get into that later. They kind of fail to convict at the trial. The mobster comes after Jackie and is like trying to kill him and ruin his life. And Jackie and the mobster's girlfriend and a few of Jackie's friends basically team up in order to steal evidence from the mobster's holdings that will prove what they need in order to get him behind bars finally. And ultimately that ends in a showdown at a shopping mall where all the glass in the universe explodes, and they finally take the bad guys in the end.
Yeah, that's pretty much the long and short of it. Sans the billions of shards of glass that people had so to probably pick out of their clothes. Yeah, so the Mr. Chu is the criminal in mm-hmm. question, and he's a politician mm-hmm. as well. So he's protected by his money and yeah. the lawyers that he hires for his defense. And the defense lawyer is just tearing the prosecution apart.
Wait, he's in politics? I just thought he was a gangster.
No, he's a politician. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Did you, I forgot to ask that. Did you watch this dubbed or did you watch it in Cantonese?
I watched it, I believe I watched it in Cantonese. Oh, no, I watched it dubbed. I'm sorry.
I think I watched it dubbed as well because it was the only way I could get my hands on it at the time.
Okay. Yeah, I think some of that's maybe the subtitles versus the dub, because I don't think they're dub titling it where they just do the script off of the subtitles.
Mm.
But it's fine. So what that comes down to is the Mr. Chu just has a lot of money and influence. Yeah. And the police are like, they need an ironclad case for this and they just don't have it. And Inspector Chen or Detective Chen.
Sergeant Chen.
Yeah, we gotta clear that up. We're promoting him extra than he gets in the film.
He's a cop of some kind.
Yes, he's some sort of police officer on a special task
force. It's a story about him.
It is his story. It's like his career story. Well, he's not starting at the bottom. He's not like a beat cop. He's a part of a special task force. And they are there to bust criminals, doing criminal investigations. And they've been trying to arrest this guy, Mr. Chu, for a long time. And the bust got screwed up on part of the gangsters like noticing the massive amount of sting undercover cops.
Well, what really sets it off, it's two things. One guy notices one of Chan's friends with an earpiece in his ear. And then the second part is, and this is why I don't understand exactly, like if you think about it, like the first time the dude was just suspicious, he wasn't really doing anything just yet, and Chan jumps the gun. He goes straight up to Selena Fong, Bridget Lin, and goes, "Hey, come with me." And she goes, "Huh, who are you?" And he goes, "I'm a cop," while she's on the phone. So everyone can overhear him say, "Hey, I'm a cop." And everyone goes, "Huh, the police," and freaks the – can I swear on this?
You can.
Freaks the fuck out and start – like that causes all the – you know, Chu and the mobsters and the other people he's meeting with just to start – panicking, and then all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
And if he would have just played it a little bit more cool in the beginning, just didn't wait till she's off the phone, wait till there's no way she can like communicate something to somebody. But no, he has to just go in gung-ho. I didn't notice that the first few times I watched it. Like, you know, a lot of times when you watch a movie, you're not really watching it to, like, pick it apart or anything like that.
No, I mean, this is just an extravaganza. It's not like a
drama. And so watching it this time, I try to pay attention to a couple more things. And that was the first thing that I noticed. I'm like, why are you blowing your cover already? Like, there was only suspicion. There was no guarantee. The guy, if the guy was really nervous about it, he would have, like, you know, like ran away or like hurried away to tell the boss or something. But nope, Chan has to ruin it.
Yeah, the criminals in this case were like, they were pretty edgy already, and you could tell it was going south before he started doing anything, but it definitely, mm-hmm. he jumped the gun. And Selena is just screaming into her phone, the police, so
yeah.
all the headquarters of the criminals, they're like doing business in like a little shanty town on a hill. And the ensuing like carnage is just like, it's very dramatic. So I don't know if either of you watched the original Infernal Affairs movies.
I actually bought them on DVD and I never watched them. I know The Departed is based off of them.
Yeah, it's the adaptation of them. But why? Yeah, watch those originally. You want some police drama. Like that's there, and it has action too. But anyway, so yeah, this a whole set piece, this shanty town, and it's super tense to the point where one of Jackie's like partners is like, everyone's nervous for this, and they're running kind of down a slope, mm-hmm. and it's just a continued shootout. Between like alleyways and buildings. What I really appreciated though was the police in this instance took the time to like show, hey, get the civilians out of here, get like explosive things out of here. And they're like, they're blowing out like little fires. They're grabbing propane tanks. They're grabbing, get the kids out. They're pulling not casualties, but they're pulling collateral damaging stuff, mm-hmm. like away. So they can do this big set piece scene.
Yep.
So it's a lot of fun because you don't normally get that. You just get, oh no, people are just going to be killed in this, because had they not pulled people out, that there would have been
a horrendous
amount of like collateral.
A lot of civilian
people. So much.
And yeah. Sorry. Go ahead, Alex.
No, I was just going to say, like, you know, I'm sure we'll get into this, but like the big set piece of this sequence is, they have a car chase through the village. And by that, I mean, like, just, it's like three cars that are just like catapulting through the structures of the village, absolutely just annihilating them. And like, yeah, if you're sitting there going, man, these villagers are just destroyed, huh? I guess that would probably hurt your enjoyment of the spectacle of it somewhat.
Well, in this entire action set piece opening between the shantytown and then the bus chase, they're kind of like tied together, is some of the most ripped off, like, I shouldn't say ripped off, but like a lot of American action movies have homage to this. Bad Boys 2 really almost deliberately close, not quite shot for shot, but pretty damn close to the chase through the shantytown.
Yeah, on purpose. I mean, like, this is an iconic scene. And yeah, this is 85. So like a lot of later movies, just if you're going to like not copy, but if you're going to pay homage to something, like you pick the best thing and like, this is it. Like this is terse. It's action filled. It's very hard to tell other than like Jackie himself, but anybody could just die. Like people are getting shot right and left. Yeah. And his his main partner is just shaking because he's not done one of these big sting things, and you could just get shot in the face.
He
pisses himself when he kills somebody. He's just stressed out guy. It's like, oh, you feel so bad for him. And everyone's just getting shot. And then for the stunts in this, they do a big slow-mo of the cars when you said they're just barreling through and like tearing through houses, and it's a downhill like slalom race, but you're just hitting every like flagpole on the way down and exploding them. But they had a lot of people on the roofs. So when you're watching like the cars bust through, people are like on those roofs jumping off like 5 seconds before the car busts through. It's fantastic. It's just like, wonder how, like, are they okay? Like, maybe they're not. Like, it's brutal.
Yeah. And this is definitely a note I have lower down, but because we know how much of these stunts is done for real compared
like all
to
all of it.
Yeah, there's no CG. Right, yeah. Yeah, exactly. There and like the degree of safety here is like, yeah, I mean, I would say by Hollywood standards, especially questionable at best. Even simple stunts suddenly seem so perlous. Whereas, mm-hmm. like, if you watch someone do some of this stuff in a Hollywood movie, you wouldn't even be, like, impressed by it, probably, because, or at least I wouldn't, because I would know that probably it wasn't even real. It was probably, I'm probably just watching a fancy CGI animation, essentially. Yeah.
Or it's green screen, they're on wires, they're slowed down.
Right.
There's no, like, the elements of danger. I mean, people do get hurt. I'm not gonna say that that doesn't happen. There's definitely deaths on stunt teams in American films too.
Where I thought about it specifically in this movie was there's a sequence later where Jackie throws someone off of a building into a swimming pool, and like that is like nothing. And if it happened in a Hollywood movie, I would have just been like, yeah, okay. But like, I can't help but have that little thing in the back of my head going, someone really jumped off of a 3-story building into a swimming pool, probably. So like, you know, it's stuff like that. And like, yeah. You get it right from the beginning, I think.
It doesn't, it only picks up as the movie goes. There's a scene in the ending, giant big battle where someone gets kicked off like an escalator, and then
oh my god, you know,
then lands in between the up and down escalator, like in the little like
the space piece. Between the,
yeah, it's very narrow, and they slide all the way down and just get stuck, and you're just like, or I think someone else gets kicked down, like the moving like the metal bits of it. It's just like, okay. I mean, they do have some stunt padding and stuff on underneath their clothes, but that's, wow.
It's only going to help so much.
A lot of sharp things.
Yeah.
At the minimum. But
there is, I mean, even in that, not to jump too far ahead to that final scene, but a couple bits after that, right before Jackie does the crazy final stunt of the movie, he's mad about the boss getting away, and actually because he like the Chu kicks his girlfriend May down a flight of stairs, he's mad about it, justifiably so, and so he basically hurls a dude onto the escalator, and you see him like land on the corner, like on the sharp edge, and then he slides down the escalator. So it's not like it's a smooth thing, it's stairs. He slides down the pointy metal stairs
that
of
are moving.
A moving escalator.
Yeah.
It's so brutal. But with the back to the intro scene, and I know like you said, we're not going to go bit by bit, but this opening set piece is just, I honestly wonder how much of this set piece, like how many times did they have to film this? I had to imagine it was only once, like, because rebuild
could
that,
you do it more than once?
But, I don't think so. A lot of these...
Jackie Chan, you know, he's known for redoing takes, multiple takes over and over and over again until it's perfect. So how many takes was this? You know, was it, did they have to rebuild this entire thing? I hope they didn't. I was trying to see if I could find information on it, but I didn't do enough behind the scenes digging.
It had to do it more than once, because in the outtakes of the film, I think it's Chu's red car that was like space car or something. Like, I remember it had a weird name on the model of car, Cosmo car or something. But it it comes out of the last garage thing and then flips over and then lands on its roof and just is like crushed. And you just see the crew like running over to grab the stunt driver out.
Mm-hmm.
So there had to be multiple takes, because in the final take, it goes all the way down into the street.
Right.
And there's cuts in that. You know, it's not like,
yeah.
It's not a Tony Jaa like one take of a fight up a building. It's multi angles, a bunch of cameras. So they do what they can to kind of stitch it together to make it the most harrowing thing. But you can tell just each individual part of it is like days of shooting, probably.
probably months. I mean,
yeah.
What is it? Wasn't the, like, there was a movie, Dragon Lord or whatever, was, I don't know if it still holds the record for the most number of takes in a film, but for a long while, that movie had, like, the most number of takes, and it was a Jackie Chan film, and it's, he's just no, and later on, he does that whole thing in the police station with all the phones and everything. Oh, yeah.
Like, the kick of that forever. Pencil, like, yep. That is definitely like 100 takes worth of attempts, no doubt.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that he does with ladder work, and he, like, it's, you watch the final take, you're like, yeah, that's just solid. And you go, like, how many times did he hit himself in the face with, like, the metal ladder? Usually quite a few. But yeah, like, this, it's just, it having this set the pace for the movie, but then the movie starts kind of slowing a little bit. It was made it a little rough to on this rewatch, just because it's been years since I've seen this. But they did just recently release, I don't think it was Arrow Video. It's not a Criterion, or maybe it was a Criterion. I think it's a Criterion set that did Police Story 1 and 2. And so they remastered it. It's just fantastic. It's super clear, very crisp. So I do have that on Blu-ray. This, although I have that, it was easier for me just to watch it on my phone. Like, cause I didn't have to plug TV stuff together. So I just watched it on, like, Max subscription. But that did have the original language cut.
Yeah. After the initial, like, stunning stuff of the first two, like, big set pieces, the other one being the like infamous image of, like, Jackie hanging off the back of a bus by an umbrella hook, right?
Insane. But
yeah. Which I don't know that either Charlie Chaplin or Buster Keaton actually ever did that, but it looks like a thing they would have done in one of their movies. Which,
I mean, he was inspired by those, by Buster Keaton and Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah. So no, he loves their stuff. So
I don't know, but sorry, continue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I just wanted to bring that up as the other, the true essence of Jackie Chan films is, like, a solid fusion of the physical comedy of people like Buster Keaton and, traditional martial arts films. Mm-hmm. It's just important to give props to both ends of that. But I did have a note past this point when I was watching it that says there are exactly two kinds of sparkling flavors in a Jackie Chan movie: comedy and action comedy. If Jackie's not allowed to be in one of those modes, a scene usually feels mostly like connective tissue. Jackie only manages to fit in, like, one joke in the whole sequence at the police station where they're interrogating Selena. It doesn't drag, but it feels like you're suddenly dropped back into a normal police drama for a bit before the Jackie Chan-ness of it all can reassert itself.
Yeah, as an aside, but a Jackie Chan related one, did you guys watch the I think it's him and I want to say Pierce Brosnan,
The Foreigner.
That was fantastic.
It's a great movie.
And there's a little bit of old school Jackie Chan in there. It's
oh, really?
Toward the end, but as a drama, and just, you want to see someone be a crushed man, like, that one is, it's a little tough to watch because Jackie Chan just brings all of his years of acting into to do this just sad man.
See, this is part of the reason why I've kind of fallen off of new Jackie Chan, is I don't really want to watch a sad man. Like, I love Jackie Chan's stuff for its, like, effervescence. Uh-huh. That doesn't sound like a good time to me.
It's a good movie, though.
It's a really good movie. Yeah. It also, if you're looking for like something that's a little bit more comedic with a Jackie Chan twist, Skip Trace isn't awful. It's Jackie Chan and Johnny Knoxville.
It was fine. Like I watched it. It was fine though. I lowered my expectations because it's Johnny Knoxville. Mm-hmm. And I was like, well, it's also like considerably older than Jackie Chan, so let's see what they can do. And it was a good time.
Also, what is it? It came out in 2012, Chinese Zodiac. It was supposed to be
is that the Indiana Jonesy kind of one?
Yeah, because I mean, okay. He's done those types of movies before. Like that, there's like, what is it? The Armor of the Gods, mm-hmm. from like 92, I want to say. Yeah,
which is classic. That's still
yeah.
really good.
Yeah, that was like, that's supposedly like in the same lineage, kind of like how, you know, Police Story. There's like six different movies, but after Police Story 2, they have Police Story 3, Super Cop, and then they have, Jackie Chan's First Strike, which is technically yep. Police Story 4, even though they don't always call it Police Story 4, like yep. you don't always see it type of thing. I feel like it's kind of like that. But Chinese Zodiac, it came out in 2012, so granted, that was also like 12 years ago, yeah. but Jackie was, you know, he's turning 70 this year, so he was like 58 at the time that movie came out, or close to it, so he was still up there, and he does some cool stuff. There's a little bit more wire work in it than you'd like to see, but, you know, he's also 58, so I don't necessarily blame him for doing that.
And that's tough, because it's not just like, oh, he's 58, it's, he's been doing this since he was a child, so
yeah.
the man's like broken more every bones bone. Than like just other about. Everyone else collectively combined, mm-hmm. like on a regular basis. Like he doesn't leave anything on the, you know, on the ground. He like, it's all, he puts his all into all the stuff he does. And it's like this man has inspired literally generations of martial artists and stunt people, and just folks wanted to kind of not even get into the business, but just to do zany things. Like I got into martial arts mainly because of like the big like Jet Li, Jackie Chan, and a few other big mainstream martial artists, and then eventually Tony Jaa, because it took an extra 20 years, but I am now studying Muay Boran. So I was like, yes, Ong Bak, I wanted to do this like 20 years ago. And I'm practicing, and I'm feeling my age, and I'm in my 40s, and I'm like, okay, I can do this stuff, but yeah, I don't bounce back quite as quick, and I don't do this for like a living. So I can imagine.
Well, and like, you were saying, like he's inspired so many people. Johnny Knoxville is, I'm pretty sure Jackie is one of his inspirations. And so when he got
I think
to do
so. Skip I mean, they do a lot of just pratfall kind of just ridiculous stunts. That was their whole Jackass steez.
I mean, I've never really gotten into Jackass. I've honestly never even tried watching the show or any of the movies. But like, I don't know about how they are as people, but I kind of have a respect for the fact that they're just trying to do practical stunts. They're all for the sake of comedy. Like I like Jackie's more just because there's a storyline to it. And there's the fight scenes have a little bit of gravity as opposed to just like, let's get hit in the nuts 1,000 times. Like I don't necessarily enjoy that, but
yeah. And his isn't gross out humor.
Yeah. You know, it's just not my cup of tea. Comedy. But it still is like a similar muscle to what Jackie does with his stunts, where it's, you're doing things for the sake of an art form that is putting you in jeopardy, that's putting you in danger. Yeah. And the fact that he almost died, I think it was actually Armor of God, where it was, you know, compared to the other shit, and especially what we're going to talk about at the end of this movie, where all the stunt was, he was jumping from one wall onto a tree branch, swinging off the tree branch onto another wall on the other side. And of course, there's nothing underneath to protect him or any of that type of stuff, because he's Jackie Chan, and or at least not a lot. And he did it once and didn't like the take, and so decided to do it again. And the tree branch broke. That was a tongue twister. And he fell, and he like has a plastic plug in his skull to this day because of hitting his head on that fall.
Hole in his head. Yeah. Yeah, that was his most like grievous injury, I think, because it's still extant.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But to get back to the movie, one other thing I want to bring up about this opening scene, we talked about the bus, the finale of the bus stunt where he gets kicked after the umbrella bit. He does get pushed off the bus and he runs down an insanely steep hill. Like it is this stone. It's mind-boggling to watch him do it. He gets down to the bottom, stops the car down at the bottom, and then to basically head the bus coming down the hill off at the pass. And then, you know, he points his pistol right at the bus, and you know, kind of does this like almost the standoff with it. And he's able to he fires a shot in the air, which causes all the guys like basically holding the bus driver hostage to jump back, so the bus driver can slam on the brakes. And it causes all of the bad guys to fall through the break through the front glass of the bus to fall out of it onto the road. And apparently they were supposed to actually fall out onto the car so they would have something to brace their fall, just a slightly less of a drop. And the bus stopped too short, so they all fell out onto the road with even less padding than a car, which is just terrifying to think about.
It's none. And it's a double-decker bus. They went out of the second story of the bus. And then it's a stunt that you can watch in slow motion at the end of the film. And you watch all of them like fall and then tuck the best they can. So they kind of land, because they land head first on the pavement, but they're able to tuck and land on their shoulders a little bit. But that's it. And they're probably all knocked out. They stop moving.
Yeah. To be fair, it looks great in the movie, though.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I mean it's like perfect stunt. Did they die? No, they're still part of the team. But are they in the hospital for a while? Maybe.
Possible. Well,
what is it? That part I mentioned before, how you know Michael Bay paid homage to the car portion. Sylvester Stallone paid homage to this scene in Tango and Cash.
Yeah.
So that intro scene is just bonkers to me. And you mentioned it before, Dave, I don't remember if it was on or off, Mike, I apologize, but like after this crazy bonkers opening, it does tone down for a little bit. It gets very, it slows down the pace, which honestly, I wish it was a little bit quicker pace, but not by much, because when you have this insane opening, you need almost like a long cooling off period for when the next stunt scene to come up. When that happens, the next fight scene is after he tries to convince Selena to testify, and he has it's honestly a really funny scene where he gets his cop buddy Kenny to pretend to be a killer to assassinate Selena and prove to her like, oh, see, Chu's actually trying to kill you. You better be careful. And then that whole scene is just hysterical. But we'll come back to that in just a second. But like after that, he's bringing her back to his place so that way he can protect her better. And that's when Chu's men actually attack, and it's an actual threat to Selena's life. Mm-hmm. That first real fight scene in the movie, not just an action set piece, is so good. Like the choreography is stunning, and I want to bring it up here real quick. Have either of you ever heard of the YouTube channel Rocket Jump, formerly known as Freddie W?
No.
They were one of the first like really big YouTubers in terms of like, or they were an early YouTuber that really blew up for a while. They were known for special effects, and they're so good at special effects, but I don't watch a lot of their stuff anymore. They don't do a whole lot. They peaked in popularity probably in the early 2010s when they did a series called Video Game High School, which was really cool. And they did a whole thing about, they would do like little action shorts, right? Mm-hmm. And they kind of talk a little bit about it in there, but there's also another YouTube channel that's now defunct that I want to shout out called Every Frame of Painting.
Sure.
You know what I'm talking about with that?
Of course. Yeah.
And they they talk about a similar philosophy. Specifically, every frame of painting is specific to Jackie Chan. Freddie W. and the Rocket Jump guys, now Rocket Jump, they kind of always did that. I would almost argue inspired from Jackie Chan, where when you see Jackie Chan's fight scenes, action and reaction are in the same frame. They are in the same shot. And it makes it a lot easier for you, the audience, to be able to track what's happening in the fight scene, as opposed to what we see in a lot of American movies, where, especially in the Bourne movies, which is more bonkers to me, because if you see behind the scenes stuff of the Bourne movies, they were actually doing a lot of that shit. Like, there's some really good choreography in those movies, but you can't tell because of the way they chose to film it. And Jackie's
editing, they jump cut the crap out of it, and you're just like, what just happened?
And Jackie's filming is nothing but wide shots, slower pace on the editing. So they let the action speak for itself. They don't need the editing to make it better. And listen, I'm not this is going to sound like an old man yells at cloud type of thing. Like, oh, these American movies, they don't know how to edit. Like, I don't know how to edit action. I'm not going to claim to be like an expert on it. But I do think some movies, like more American movies, can do things like it like that and do it well. But what I love about Jackie's style is that he will, like, you'll see like a fight scene happening, and on one side of the frame, a little bit more prominent than you would expect, you might see where the action set piece is going. So like, you notice it in, like, especially in the mall fight scene, where he'll be fighting someone and a portion of the frame will be the escalator, and then it'll cut to another angle, and that's when Jackie kicks the dude onto the escalator. So it sets it up within the shot for you as the audience to be like, to even if you're not conscious, like you're not actively being like, oh hey, there's an escalator over there, but you see it and you recognize it in the frame. So when it happens, everything within the space makes sense. And this first scene, this first action set piece scene where he's fighting in a car, is a lot like that, where they because the camera moves all over the place, but you never feel like you lose track of where the action is taking place. And it's just awesome.
Yeah, it's pulled back enough that you can see the scene in total. Like, you're able to keep track of all the players pretty much all the time. And the fight scenes, they tell a story. Like, you're given all of those, like, beginning, a crescendo, and an end, like, to the fight scenes. There's a good flow and pace to it. Whereas, yes, with something like the Bourne films, it's like, okay, it's a bunch of, like, strobe lights and sharp cuts. And it has the effect of making Jason Bourne look like a badass, because he just murked somebody and it's real fast. But you can't tell what. You don't have all the pieces of the puzzle. You get like the end, like it starts and then it's over. You're like, okay, but what happened?
Yeah, and of course, like to play devil's advocate for poor Jason Bourne here, who can't defend himself. Like the whole idea of the Bourne identity in particular is that you feel the chaoticness of actually being in a fight. Right? Their goal is not to illustrate for you the beautiful operatic ballet of a martial arts sequence, like in kung fu action movies. The idea is to make it feel like you are in a fight. And I think that at least the first Bourne Identity movie actually does that extremely well.
I'd agree with that.
It's just going in a different direction, right? And unfortunately, that direction got so popular in Hollywood that by the late aughts, you know, the late 2000s, early 2010s, you got movies like Chronicles of Riddick, where you actually can't see any of the choreography at all. And that's clearly taking it too far. Like, at that point, like, why are you hiring choreographers? Like, what, you know? So like, we're not at that place anymore in American action movies. Like, they definitely realized that they went too far and kind of pulled back. I can't cite a specific American movie where that process started getting pulled back, but you know,
they like, started doing it with some TV shows. So there's a Korean film, Old Boy, And they did do a remake with Josh Brolin, which is, it's okay. The original film is definitely better. But I think it's the one episode I watched of Daredevil that my friend was like, you got to see this. They do a hallway fight scene, which pretty much does the one take.
It's a big one-er, yeah.
Yeah, and it's pretty brutal, pretty fantastic. And again, you can track the action the whole time. It's dark. I think there's a weird green filter, but it lets you see like what's happening. And that was 2009 or so. So
I don't remember when the Daredevil show came out. I would say the more modern, like in terms of choreography, at least in American cinema, that got away. Like John Wick is now what everyone like tries to replicate, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and that again, that one takes the view of here's a story. We'll show you, yes, the one man army that's just murdering a bunch of people, but you can see all of what he's doing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, you get the full picture of it, even if it's him and like 100 people. And I want to say the director did music video. So it's sometimes it's a little flashy, but it's not as bad as like Bourne. Like you can still see everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a nice welcome change of pace. And that did the same thing that Jason or Bourne Identity did, where movies started taking notes from that, and like that's better,
yeah,
because you get to see everything. Direction.
Yeah, I would prefer to see it. Yes,
yes, yeah. I don't need the two fighters like walk into a room, the lights go off, and you hear and it comes back on, and like there's 10 knocked out people. It's like okay, yeah, you made someone seem like a badass, but you didn't get to see any of it. You're just telling and not showing. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
this,
a lot of,
you know, this doesn't do that, police story.
I was just going to say, and a lot of that's just because American actors, and this isn't to denigrate them, but, you know, they're not like you said before, Jackie was trained in this since he was a kid. He went to learned Chinese opera at when he was like 13, he started, or younger, maybe.
I think
eight.
He was younger.
Yeah. And I mean, there's horror stories of that place. Like there's,
oh yeah, yeah. No, it's
unfortunately there's a reason he's as good as he is.
Yeah. Yeah. He's part of the Three Little Fortunes. So it's him, Sammo Hung and Yung Biao.
Sammo Hung, man. I feel like, I mean, I'm sure people within who watch a lot of martial arts movies love him, but I really feel like I wish he would have taken off more in the West.
He got martial law and that was kind of it.
Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so how this all this kind of plays out is we have the fight scene it's at night and it's well lit.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And you can't go like, oh, I can't see anything. No, you can see the whole thing. It's like on a side street or a parking lot area.
Yep.
And it's like, no, you can see all the stuff going on and it's frantic, and at no point does Jackie look, and it's his like signature trait, he doesn't look like he's in control of what's happening, but he will be on top.
Yeah,
it's like he has that wonderful like, I'm panicking but I'm skilled in the thing I'm doing, but wow, this could hurt me.
Yeah, Jackie's whole thing is like he paints himself as an underdog through the situation that he's in. He always starts from behind. In this particular fight, the reason he's behind is he doesn't have his gun, because it was in the jacket that he gave to Selena because she was cold. And then they got jumped by thugs. So he has no weapon. They're all coming after him. And all he has to use to protect himself is the environment, basically. There's like amazing environment work in this fight.
Using windows and car doors and putting people through car windshields. And there's some pretty brutal stunt work going on here. He's like drop kicking people through windshields and smashing their heads with the door. There's a lot of fun stuff. And it just looks like raw. And he's scrambling and trying to get this gun, and Selena gets the gun, but she's What I do, so she's the secretary for Mr. Chu, but she's also like more than a secretary, or she's
you get the idea. There's been some fraternizing,
To say the but least. This is not her element. She doesn't do hands-on. She's like book work. She has some. She knows where some codes are. She can do computer access. Like she's secretary stuff, not go out and like do wet work or hands-on like baddie stuff. So she's constantly not in her element at all. She's on the wrong foot, except for when it comes to like manipulating Jackie.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But here it's one of many moments where she's just caught flat-footed and she's scrambling, trying to get this gun, but now she's scared, and then she gets the gun, and that's her like one bit of control. But the fact that her own lover / employer has like sent a hit squad on her because he doesn't want her to testify as witness, which that may or may not have been her plan. Like there's never, he doesn't get to contact her to like, to, you know, confirm anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's just like, doesn't want to be there. And she's pointing the gun at like everybody, like at Jackie, at all the guys. And everyone's just like, hey, hang on. You know, she could just shoot any one of us. That is something that is part of why these fight scenes and these like chaotic stuff really works, is because everyone's they look like they're emotionally invested in what the action that's occurring.
Mm-hmm.
Like even the people that are just like thugs, they're upset. They are mad, or you know, they're showcasing something more than just like a fighting skill.
Yeah, it's not just like a martial arts demonstration disguised as a fight scene. It's like there's character work going on, even with people we aren't necessarily going to ever see again. Just because a thug is just getting beat up in this scene doesn't mean he doesn't have feelings about getting beat up.
Yes. Even he has feelings too. He doesn't want his, and his feelings include not wanting to get his head smashed through a door.
Correct. Yes.
Or shot at. Or stuck with his own knife, or hit in the back of the head with a vase. We didn't talk about that, but when his cop buddy is pretending to be an assassin, he gets like weakened at Bernie, and it's fantastic. He gets knocked out, and then Jackie's like puppeting him, trying to pretend he's still like not still conscious.
Yeah,
but the best part of that entire scene is when he's trying, like he got hit, his buddy got hit in the head, and he's on the verge of losing consciousness. And then Jackie's trying to wake him up, and then Selena smashes him over the head again.
Yep.
He's biting his friend's face mask to keep his head up. It's so good.
Yeah, it's amazing comedy for it to be a three-person scene where, on paper to this woman, at least, it's like there's an attacker and there's Jackie and there's her, and she and Jackie are on the same side. But Jackie secretly knows that he and this other guy are on the same side, and she's not in on the joke, basically. So she's like constantly trying to help Jackie, and like as a result of that is like just annihilating this poor friend of Jackie's who's doing a kind of like a dime store Michael Myers impression.
It's one of my favorite moments in the whole movie. It's one of the best comedic moments, I think. If it wasn't for this scene, everything that happens afterwards would have actually been successful for Jackie. Like if he would have not tried to fake this, eventually, Chu would have tried to have her killed, and he would have had to save her anyway. But because Jackie does this, Selena later on, when she does eventually go to his house, she sees a picture of Kenny there, because he tried to hide Kenny's face as long as he could, but through all the chaos that he wasn't able to.
Right.
And in this rewatch of the movie, it made me appreciate Selena's character a lot more, that she was a lot, you know, Jackie Chan movies, he doesn't always treat women well in his movies.
Yeah, that's true.
To say the least. But in this, for her character specifically, she, it's weird. So like May is not a great character in my opinion. She doesn't have a lot going on for her, and it's, I understand she's meant to be more in the background, but they give her a bizarre amount of like screen time for someone who doesn't have a whole lot to do in the movie. But like Selena, the fact that like she's smart, like she sees Kenny, immediately puts everything together, like, oh, so he's just trying to trick me. And if it, and then she sets up a whole, she puts a whole plan in motion. And then obviously when it comes out that Chu really did try to kill her, then she's willing to help, and she uses her knowledge and skill set to get evidence to put Chu away. But like up until then, you know, she falls for Jackie's bullshit in the beginning, and then she feels so embarrassed that she fell for it that she ends up making him get embarrassed in the courtroom later on. And I just, I liked that bit of character work for her because it showed, it made her actually seem like a person as opposed to just someone there, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and that's the problem with Jackie's girlfriend in this, though. She doesn't like get an arc really, because it's all the screen time is given to Selena. Mm-hmm. So she shows up and then she gets embarrassed because even in this, or not even in this. So in this one, Jackie's character is—he's not like a nice guy. He's not a good
dude. No,
no, he's goofy, and so you like him because he's affably charming and he does his job. But just his relation, his interpersonal relationship skills aren't good.
No, and yeah, he put all his points in dexterity and dumped wisdom very clearly.
Yeah, and he's just not treating his girlfriend very well, and he's like talking bad about her behind her back. It's just like not great. And then he gets made a fool of, but it's like he deserved it, like completely. So you're not going, oh, it's more like, yeah, that was you need to own up on that and you need to apologize, and there's a lot of work you need to do on yourself, I think.
I don't know if I agree that the movie presents him as a character who needs work necessarily, but I would agree that that's true.
Yeah, I mean, just like objectively as watching it, you're going like, that yeah, wasn't cool. I mean, yeah, I know this is 1995, sure, but dude, like,
well, it's the arrogance in which every time, like, he can't be wrong. Like, that wouldn't be as much of an issue if it wasn't for the fact, like, so after he brings Selena back to his house to protect her, it turns out today, that same day, is his birthday. And May and a bunch of people are there to celebrate. And of course, she sees Selena coming in a nightie and Jackie bringing her in. So it kind of justifiably so in her standpoint, she'd have questions. I don't like necessarily, like, I wrote it in my own notes for this. Like, May gives him, doesn't even let him explain a thing, but at the same time, after she does that, like, Jackie does nothing to like give himself any redeeming fact, like, characteristics. Like, when May comes back trying to talk to Jackie's just bad mouthing her to Selena because he doesn't know that she's there. And I'm sorry, even when I get into a fight with my wife, I need to vent about it, I don't badmouth her. I don't.
You don't call someone's character into question when you're to another party that you don't know.
Yeah, you definitely get the sense based on her reaction and how he acts afterwards that this is probably not the first time that they've had this kind of thing happen to them, right? Mm-hmm. I will say, though, that I love that Jackie does manage to fit just a little bit of stunts even into this scene of like domestic comedy when May like slams him in the face with a cake and he does like a full like 180 over a couch and slams into the floor. Like it could have been literally just like a pie to the face equivalent shot. But of course, because it's Jackie Chan, he goes the extra mile. And like,
I mean, he gets caked twice.
Yeah, that's true.
The other note I put down was Jackie super dense. And I what I mean by that is he doesn't understand why May is misconstruing anything. I'm like, are you fucking stupid? Like, you brought another woman home barely wearing anything and in your jacket. Like,
yeah,
like that. I'm sorry. You should have been able to put two and two together. And there's so many times where like May will try to talk to him about something that she's upset about. And he just like, oh, I don't know. He does not understand. It's not even that he doesn't understand women. He just doesn't understand people in this movie.
Yeah. Well, that's what I'm saying is like interpersonal. Like it's not just with his girlfriend. It's with everybody.
Everyone.
Yeah. It's constant. And it's,
he just ain't that guy.
He's not that guy. But the thing is, people understand that he's like capable.
Yeah.
So he does the whole thing where he kidnaps his like superintendent, or then kidnap him. He uses him as a hostage. And then his superintendent is like, "Don't worry, I know you got this. Even though I've just been like hamstringing you for the rest of the time, like you could have given him some help like earlier, and not here at the last minute where the help amounts to you going, I'll send the people after you. Like, I'm just giving you a head start to go take care of stuff. Because it can't be on the books, because we have to like have a clean public image. It's real weird. Like, and that's a running thing with like Hong Kong police, or I mean just any police in general, particularly in Chinese films, is that they're towing two sides of the thing where like they're not always shown as like inept or corrupt, but they can be both. But they can also be beloved. It's a real like grab bag of what you're going to get with like how the police are portrayed.
There's a whole lot of feelings that came to mind when bringing up that thing of like how the police are portrayed in this, where like, on one hand, especially with the what is it? Not the chief inspector. What is his official title? Hold on, I have the cast list up here. The chief inspector, Raymond Lee is the character's name. Where Jackie's mad that he's following it by the book, and he's like, "You know, I didn't, you know, kill," because Jackie is framed for murder. You know, later on in the movie, and he's like, "You know, I didn't kill that guy. So why are you going after me?" And the chief inspector, rightfully so, was like, "Dude, all the evidence points to you. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I believe that you probably didn't do it, but my hands are tied in this situation, and like, I have to show that you're not above the law." And I'm thinking, oh boy, that hits real close to home now.
Yeah. And I mean, he says, like, what evidence, you know, bring me the evidence that you didn't do it. Like, show me who did it.
Yep. Like
above board, and you know, we can try to work this out. And at the same time, he like under the table is like, go take care of the business, and the guys will show up a little bit later. So it's a mixed message of we need the stuff to convince the courts, but the courts feels kind of rigged. And not only that is a thing, because they still at this time were under the British Commonwealth, so their hands were tied specifically in a lot of ways. But in this instance, you're getting the, hey, we got to do stuff by the book. The public eye is on this because he's in the big media attention, because he was just previous to this, due to this case, promoted and put in as like the poster boy for recruitment. So it's a super bad look if that dude is the guy framed for killing another police officer.
And in speaking of the court scene, I mean, if you don't have that little bit of context of like that historical context, this courtroom scene is real fucking weird.
Yeah.
Like, why is everyone wearing wigs? I remember when I first watched this, I had no, like, I was so ignorant, man. I had no idea that it was filmed in Hong Kong and that Hong Kong was still under British rule and all that other stuff. And so when they have this, I'm like, why are they? It just seems so silly to me. Like the first time I watched this movie, I liked the fight scenes, but a lot of the cultural differences, whether it's unfortunately, you know, because of colonialism like this or what is it? Even just like the pacing of the movie is so different from what I'm used to in American films. Yes. And that's not a bad thing. It's just it. The first time I watched it, it was hard for me to really sink, like a lot of the heavier plot points and the heavier moments to sink in, because it was just a little bit more, it was just so different to me. And so now, you know, years later and watching it more and more, now I have the historical context. Now I've also gotten used to the pacing and the way things are, not just in terms of the action, but the way in terms the story is told. It hit a lot harder for me this time. This story, I feel like the first time I watched it, it went right over my head. But mm-hmm. watching it now, like, you know, this is like however, I don't know, like the sixth or seventh time I've probably watched this movie. This movie has a really good story. And I don't know if it gets... I mean, I can't say, I don't know what the general consensus is in among like martial arts movie fans, but like, I feel like it doesn't get talked about a lot.
It's a classic that's more known for its set pieces than the story, because the story is pretty boilerplate. It's not a great like written thing, but it hits the points it needs to do. It's coherent. And it has a little bit of something to say with like the political and social environment at the time.
Yeah.
But without those touchstones, like I don't think it's a little harder to watch this as an overseas like a media. Like if you're not used to watching Hong Kong films or this genre, you can follow along with it, but I feel like you're just waiting for the next action piece to happen.
Yeah. And I also feel like with the way the story is told, like you said, if you're not used to how like Hong Kong movies, and which I don't even consider myself used to them now, because I don't watch as much as I probably would like to. The way the story beats are told, it feels like the plot points come out very quickly, not out of nowhere, but they just come out very quickly. It feels like there's not a whole lot of like rising to the each plot point, and then like there's not a lot of crescendos and decrescendos. It's a lot of spikes in terms of plot. Some big event will happen, and then you'll have some character building, and then another big event will happen, and then some more character building. Where I feel like in American cinemas, it's a lot more like rounded out, and for better or worse, you know, it's your preference. But in this, I really enjoyed it, rewatching it this time. And the set pieces in this, man, like you said, Dave, people do look for the set pieces in this movie. And by God, there's so many good ones.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun. It's a fun movie. I think, as I mentioned, I feel like it drags a little bit, but to your point, Josh, it needed that space to breathe, because the beginning was a lot. It was a lot to like absorb, and you can watch that a couple times, I think, in a row and still like see more things, because there's like 20 dudes having a firefight and it's moving through like alleys and rooftops, and you're just like, oh, wait, it's chaotic for a reason, so it's really hard to tell which guys are the police after, which guys are bad guys. Did he shoot his own guy? You know, there's a lot happening. And it's to the credit that it does convey that, like, the guys in the scene, like, in the movie, don't know what's going on. Like, logistics is broken down. There's guys on the strike team that leave their post to the detriment of like the sting, but it's to help. Like, I can't say that was the wrong thing to do, because they're like, all hands on deck, the operation's blown, we gotta go catch the guy, they're running. So I feel like their call at that time was like, well, this thing's botched, we just gotta go try to grab him. But if they'd stay there, they would have caught him, because they were chased down that road to that roadblock. So,
well, and wasn't one of the cops also crooked in that, and that's why he got away too?
Yeah.
And real quick, just in terms of set pieces and whatnot, just in the pacing we were talking about, I have the movie up in front of me, right? The opening action set piece, you know, the car chase through the shanty town with the bus chase and everything like that. That takes up about the first 15 to 16 minutes of the movie.
Yeah, I'd say it's like 20 minutes in before it slows down.
Mm-hmm. And then at 35 minutes in, approximately, is when that action set piece with the car, with the car fight scene where he's bringing Selena over to his place and the guys stop him and whatnot. And then after that, there's not another like action set piece or an action sequence until over an hour in. Like, it's not up until about an hour and 10-ish minutes in. That's when Jackie has that's when he's trying to find Selena, and he's trying to that's when he gets framed, is about an hour and 10 minutes in. And then from the rest of the movie, it's pretty intense. Like, it's not necessarily because action is intense, but because of the plot, you know, he's framed for murder. The he's holding the police chief. The drama is going everywhere. Sorry. I feel like I'm rambling now.
No, I mean, you're making a point. So yeah, there's a lot of downtime. There's like 30 minutes of like just character building and letting us know what's happening with this like crime case. Cause it's a case, the courtroom stuff and those things. While it slows things down, it's still moving forward. So mm-hmm. I don't feel like there's anything where they could have tightened it up, because it's not digressing. It's not talking about some other thing. It's like, no, these are the building blocks you need to understand to show that how much trouble the police are having to like get this stuff together. There's a lot of red tape. And that's something with like, it's a completely different genre, different thing, but Shin Godzilla does that. It's a giant monster movie extravaganza, but a lot of politics. This thankfully has a lot less I love Shin Godzilla, but the politicking in this is minimal, but it's to a point. So I don't feel like it derails. It's like, no, the train's still going. It's just kind of pulling into the station, and then it explodes. Yep. For like the ending.
Yeah, I mean, like that. There's not like huge set pieces for the middle portion of this movie, but that there are like, you get more like comedy like pieces. Like there's a very funny sequence in the middle here where Jackie goes to meet May to try to smooth things over, and he parks his car on a hill, and and like he ends up getting like embroiled in work stuff and telling May that he's gonna have to leave, and she's like mad at him or whatever, and then like his car comes barreling down the hill and totally like pastes the phone booth he had just been making his call to work in, and like, you know, you get stuff like that, right? And that like keeps it ticking over until we can get to the big shopping mall sequence at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I mean, they've already been having relationship troubles, and this was like the big chance, to kind of make up for that, because he was supposed to go with her to, like lunch with her mother.
Yep.
Yeah.
And she's like, you keep, you know, blowing this stuff off. And he's like, okay, no, we'll go. And then, you know, he gets a beeper call. And has to make a phone call. He's like, hey, the handbrake on my car is out. Hold this for a second. She's holding it for about a second. She's like, I'm trying to talk to you. We got to go to we have a dinner reservations or whatever. And
yeah, I forgot that there's a portion of that where she's literally trying to hold the car from falling down the hill.
Yeah, it's good comedy. It's like, yeah, the situation's not great. He puts... In this instance, justifiably, he's trying to stop people from getting killed. So yes. work is in this instance more important. But it just goes to show that he's not good at like conveying that and balancing things, and he's just all over the map.
It kind of reminds me of like in a lot of movies and TV shows, how much drama could be avoided if people just fucking talked to each other and listened.
Yeah.
Like, especially, and this has nothing to do with Jackie Chan movies. This isn't even a criticism of this movie. But, like, I remember when my wife and I first started dating and whatnot, she'd watch, like, you know, like, Pretty Little Liars or something like that. Mm-hmm. And so much bullshit could be avoided if you just told the truth. And because what always happens is the truth was never really that bad to begin with. You might have, like, a little bit of awkwardness, and then you'd be over it, versus having to lie, and then it creates so many new things. And I understand it's a TV show, they're doing it for drama, but it would always just irk me that the drama they were manufacturing wasn't even, like, good drama. It was, like, people lying over the dumbest shit, and it just drove me up a wall. And to bring it back to Police Story then, it feels like a little bit like that is the communication issues with Jackie and May, where May doesn't seem willing to listen to a lot to what Jackie is, like, trying to explain, but Jackie also kind of doesn't give her reasons to listen because he's kind of an asshole a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's definitely, it's a communication issue. They're both at fault. I feel like he's more in the wrong because he's Agreed. Like talking, he's talking about her behind her back. I mean, even if it was like accidentally to her face, but he's saying, it's like, why are you guys even dating? Like, this is not a good relationship. You don't, but neither of you need to be in this right now. Like,
no,
it's not good. It's not helping anybody.
But spoilers for future Police Story movies, but May is in basically all of them. Like, like, she doesn't go anywhere. Like, yeah. They keep having these problems throughout the whole series, basically. Culminating, I think, with the funniest version of it is in Supercop, but, you know, we'll get there someday.
Yeah. But, yeah, that's, so it's all, it gives extra, like, gravitas to the situation because he's dealing with, like, this case, and then he's dealing with, so he's not really dealing with it, he's just involved in like relationship issues that he's happy to have, I think, excuses to not worry about it.
Yep.
He's like, I'll just deal with this later. So to his credit, he gets angry when May's hurt. Mm-hmm. But she, like, shouldn't have been there. Like, yeah. It's like, okay.
Well, the whole final scene was just odd that she was there because he didn't want her to be there, but she was there because she was trying to mend the relationship. And it's like this weird thing where it's like, I respect her for wanting to do that, but that's kind of on Jackie for not telling her the gravity of what he's trying to do. Like, he's just shooing her away, like, nah, not right now, don't talk, blah, blah, blah. Instead of just communicating to her, hey, there's a mobster about to come here, and I'm going to go confront him. Maybe you shouldn't hang around here right now, because I don't want you to get hurt.
Yeah.
Yeah. But
yeah, there's zero communication, or at least in a meaningful way, between the two of them in this installment. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's probably the movie. Like, I don't know that we have more to dig into on this particular one, unless there's another set piece that you wanted to talk about before we wrap it up.
Well, the only thing I want, two things I want to bring up. One, just the comedy scene in the police station with all the telephones. I referenced it that's before, really good. But just insanely okay. well, like well written, bizarrely enough. Like, I shouldn't say not, but like, cut that out. It's insanely well written. It's just the fact that he's having all these different conversations.
The setting of it is funny. Like, the thing with all the phones, and he's wrapped up in all the cords, and then he's like, I just want to chill and eat my lunch, so I'm going to, like, take all the phones off the hook so I don't get bugged. But it's like, no, you're at a call station. Like, you can't do that.
It's like, Definitely not. And the fact that he's hanging all the phones off of him, like his foot, his ones around, like, from his shirt collar.
I will add to the telephone sequence. I do also love the, like, sort of like college dorm room vibe of him, like, eating these like noodles out of an Instant Pot that they have here, with, like, he's using pencils that they're using to take notes as chopsticks. And ends up eating the eraser off of the end of one.
Both of them. Funny. He eats both erasers.
Yeah.
And he's gagging and like trying to choke. That part's funny because it's that physical comedy. Right. You're just like, oh no, whoa, man, this guy. And then he steps in a poo and is like doing Michael Jackson moves to scrape it off. Yeah. It's good. It's good. That stuff's fine. It's like, it's when the humor becomes like spoken word scripted. Like when when the humor is in the dialogue, it's when it kind of starts to fall apart, or it's like, ooh, don't say that.
Yeah.
Physical comedy is really good, but your sense for scripting, not always.
There's like one major exception to that, which is how the scene where Selena is like pretending to seduce Jackie and like all the stuff is going wrong. And that scene itself is funny. And then when you realize that the tape recorder has been taped over that was supposed to have evidence and they play it in the courtroom, and what the courtroom thinks is happening on this tape recorder, which is like, much more salacious than what actually happened. Yeah. Like it's funny in a new way, and that is very well written.
No, that was good. That was you made this innocuous, like weird, flirty thing sound like salacious, raunchy dialogue.
Yeah,
it's that was funny.
But that's like an exception to what I agree. Largely, the writing is not like doing the hard work here, right? That's not what we're watching this movie for.
No. And particularly it's his dialogue. A lot of times he just says stuff and you're like, who wrote that? Like, that's, maybe you should have thought about that. This doesn't sound good. And that's something that, like, it's not unique to this particular installment. So
no.
Yeah.
Yeah, one thing to be aware of, the dialogue's not always like the choicest subject matter. You're just like, okay, maybe Not in this year, 2024.
I mean, not even, it shouldn't even have been good back then.
No, yeah, but
just people wouldn't have batted an eye as much, I guess.
But that's not an excuse.
No. And the last thing I wanted to bring up about the movie was that final set piece, specifically the final stunt. Because I feel like we touched on the final set piece, talked about a handful of things with the final fight scene. But that final stunt, man, where he jumps onto a light fixture, slides down it, breaking through Christmas lights. I mean, these wrapped up Christmas lights, falling through a glass ceiling onto a kiosk, and then chasing after the bad guy. That is like the only thing I wish is that it was filmed a little bit more dramatically, but I understand why they couldn't practically, because Jackie was only going to realistically do that once. And I'm pretty sure he only did that once, because from what I heard, that stunt, it burned off all the skin on his hands and forearms. He got severe electrocution damage because he was electrocuted pretty severely because the crew inadvertently upped the wattage on the lights. That's why they're exploding when he's going through them.
Yeah. And so what happened there was that stunt, they had a very little roll of footage left, so they only get one go, regardless of whether they had to be able to replace it or not. And they, for safety, they originally had it plugged into like a low voltage car battery, but that wasn't, and it wasn't powering the lights, like it wasn't turning them all on. So they're like, the only way to do this is we're going to plug it into an outlet in the mall. Because it's just the mall that they rent, you know, they rented space to do this stuff.
Yep.
Yeah.
So they plugged it into an outlet, and then that, like, zapped him and gave him second-degree burns on his hands. But additionally, he wasn't ready for the take. And he's like, I'm going to do a signal. I'm going to nod. And then that's when you roll. And he's up there and in a weird crouch, like he's not, he had to make like a 10 foot like jump from the railing to get to the light thing anyway.
Really? Was that like a 10 foot
jump? It was something pretty long, like he had to do a more of a running jump, but he didn't have the chance because he like cricked his neck or something, and they thought that was him nodding. So they're like, roll footage. And he's like, well, I can't stop to think because we only have this much left. So he just unpreparedly like jumps. And I don't know, like, the whole thing was like, well, we had five high speed cameras running. So in the movie, you get three shots of it. It like repeats itself three times from different angles. Because it's mm-hmm. the big stunt for the movie. Because he has to hit the ground and like continue fighting, like after jumping down. Because it's several stories.
Which I also don't understand how he continues to even, like, because you see in the one shot, he gets up from the kiosk and continues to run.
And he dislocated his pelvis or something.
Yes. How do you run adrenaline when you've dislocated your pelvis?
Adrenaline. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. You realize afterwards, uh-oh, I've injured myself severely.
Things aren't working the right way. Oh, no. Yeah.
And I've done not that, of course, far, far less severe injuries. When I was first studying martial arts, I was working on arm breaks with another student, and we had to practice things reverse to where you're using your non-dominant hand to do a lot of the movements, just because you need to be able to do stuff both sides of the body. And I was punching, and they did like the fake arm break, but they like dislocated my shoulder.
Ooh.
And I didn't know. We heard a noise and we're like, huh, that's weird. So I went to go do it again and throw a punch, and my arm just like, it didn't go anywhere. Like I just went, whoop. And so I got kicked really hard because they're supposed to catch my arm, and you're using a foot to like stop someone from approaching. Mm-hmm. So I got like booted by a 6'3" dude, and I'm like, I was like 5'7", and I just got like launched, and I'm like, I can't, So I had to get up and like slam my arm into like a wall to try to reset it.
Pop it back in. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, I can see just all that to say, like, when you're doing something, you don't always know like the extent of an injury, especially like, I can imagine that, like, man, you weren't prepared all the way, and you just got to go. And you're like, I'm burning everything. This all hurts. I've still got to keep doing the scene because we can't stop and can't do it again. And then you realize, I broke both my leg. You know, it's like, you know, and you know, this is what he does. So, how many times, if you're not knocked out, you're still going, because the camera's still rolling, and that's part of the gig. It's like, okay, yeah, that's rough. It looks good on camera, though.
It looks great on camera. And the last thing I want to say about the whole final fight scene and stunt is, just once again, like, I think what I've realized after watching a lot of martial arts movies, and I'm not going to say I've seen a lot compared to even you, Dave, or you, Alex, seeing between Tony Jaa and Donnie Yen and, you know, Iko Uwais. How do you pronounce Iko? Is it Iko Uwais? Iko Uwais?
Iko Uwais,
Iko Uwais. No one does choreography like Jackie. Like, I don't know what it is, but I just feel like there's so much creativity in the way he choreographs a fight scene. And the final fight scene of this movie is, it's pretty early on in his, like, directorial career. But you can still see all the hallmarks of it early on. Like he uses so many different things. He uses like clothes stands. Like there's like a rolling, like a rack.
Yeah,
shirt like rack with wheels on the bottom. There is like a mirror. He gets a random motorbike from the mall too. Yeah. A motorcycle, which I felt was a little out of place. Cause I don't know. That was just weird to just suddenly appear in a mall. Like I understand one could be there, but anyway, but yeah, like there's just mirrors he uses, like even like steps and stuff like that. There's just so much creativity with the environment, and that's what I think is what I've fallen in love with his movies and his choreographies, because he uses so much of the environment to enhance his fight scenes versus like he'll have moments where it's just straight up, you know, like hand to hand, balls to the wall, like combat. But then what really stands out to me is just when he's able to utilize the environment around him. And this final fight scene just has so much of that. There's a lot of glass. It's a mall, you know, hence the loving nickname Glass Story or whatever it is. Just, I can't get over it, man. I think that's why I will always be a sucker for his movies, just because I really don't enjoy other people's I do enjoy other people's choreography quite a bit, but not to the level that I enjoy Jackie Chan's. And this movie, like, I guess it's kind of like, I don't know if it's cool, we go into like final thoughts. This movie kind of reminds me of, you ever hear of like, you'll hear of a movie for years on end. Like, you've heard the line from Die Hard, Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker, before you probably saw the movie Die Hard. Unless you saw it in theaters. I'm talking about people like I was born the year the year after Die Hard came out. So like, yeah.
It's in the pop culture lexicon.
Yeah, I'll Be Back from The Terminator, you know, shit that I was not around to experience firsthand. Mm-hmm. And so you hear all that, and so you're thinking like, okay, this is such a cliche, it's got to be stupid, right? Like, and then you actually watch it, and then you realize like, oh, this is why it was popular. This is why it was good for, it was known and good for a reason. And Police Story very much feels like that, like, where once you hear about Police Story and how so much of action cinema has been inspired by it, and then you watch it and you're just blown away by what they were able to accomplish in 1985, like this, between the cinematography, between the choreography, between the stunt work and everything, like what he was able to accomplish in 1985 with this movie is just breathtaking. And it still is enjoyable to me today to watch it. Like, I adore this movie.
Yeah. How about you, Alex?
Yeah. I mean, like, I mean, earlier we were talking about how, this movie has like all the hallmarks of, a Jackie Chan movie. And really the reason why is because it invented them, right? Like, this is where the Jackie Chan movie really truly begins. Like, there are other Jackie Chan movies that come before this, but they're not like capital G, capital C, capital M Jackie Chan movies. This is where it all comes together, and like, there's just a huge number of deeply enjoyable, deeply awesome action movies that come out the other end of this film. We've talked about some of them with like Armor of God and Operation Condor, but also like, much later on, we would get like Rumble in the Bronx and just like his whole milieu is like there's like a huge staple of work that comes out of this film that is like so impactful to how action films are shot. Like even today, like just this last year, I was watching the Yu Yu Hakusho live action adaptation, and there's a fight sequence that happens in a used car park, basically, that feels so much like that big fight scene that we wax poetic about in this movie. Like it has so much of that same energy. And that was made last year, so it's mm-hmm. like, it's so incredibly important, this film, despite its few shortcomings. It's just a blast and such a pleasure to watch, even now.
Yeah. There's a few like touchstone films that just do that. Another one would be French Connection. That's one of the first like big car chase scenes, and then everything after that, every movie that had a car chase scene owes to that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And this has a lot of that same energy. I mean, because we've already talked about some of the movies that paid homage to it, and it's not just saying like, oh, other Hong Kong movies or other Jackie Chan films. It's like, no, internationally, other studios and things just pull from this because it's good, it worked real well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I don't have anything else to add to that. It's like, this is a great movie. It has its couple shortcomings, and we talked about those, but the rest of it's like chef's kiss. Like, this is the, when it's on, it's on.
And it's on, like, it's so on. So much so, like, even we were talking about, like, the juxtapositions, everything. The end, the final shot of this movie, and I mentioned before how, like, sometimes the pacing and, like, the style of movie making in different countries can be a little jarring to, for, you know, Americans, because we're not used to it. The ending of this movie doesn't have, like a conclusion per se. Like, Jackie gets the bad guy, but the credits roll, and he is going at Chu like a rabid animal, and people have to hold him back, and then credits roll. You're like, oh, I guess that's it. There's no, like...
it freeze frames on rage, like, face. How come
we're not going to be able to see, like, did the dude go to prison? You know, blah, blah, blah. You find out a little bit more in the next movie, of course, yeah. But, like... in the first one, it just kind of ends on that. You're like, oh, well, I guess that's it. Okay. But it's fantastic.
And that's a absolute staple fantastic. Of a lot of early, or even the earlier Jackie Chan films, and then like the decade prior to this, where they just, that and then the kung fu cinema, the wuxia stuff, it ends on like jumping freeze frames. Or some kind of actions happening, and it gets blurry, and then credits go. Because a lot of times these stories, they're told in a way that, like, it acknowledges that things go on outside the scope of, like, this particular tale. Like, mm-hmm. the events of this happen, but they're just a series in the events of the story of whatever this character is. Because a lot of the characters are ongoing, like they are in epic tales.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. The I was gonna say before when you know we were talking about the kind of like peaks that exist in this movie is it's like, you know, no one who wrote this movie ever read Save the Cat. You know what I mean? Like they're not operating off of like how Hollywood believes that the structure of movies must be constructed, and like wuxia tales largely existed like that. They were printed in newspapers, right? And so it's like it's peaky like that because it's like each kind of little scene tells its own individual story, and then they string together into a much larger, grander epic. And that's kind of how all action movies work in China. I mean, like, obviously in more modern time frames, they've been more influenced by the West, but like, you know, you see echoes of that, right? Like that's why they're like that.
Yeah. They feel like, there was a small resurgence of old, serials. So that's things like, Superman, like a radio play. We had a lot of radio right. plays in the West, and there were serials that were The Shadow and these other like sort of comic like pulp figures, and their stories were just a day in the life. I mean, it was it's a little episode, and they would resolve something, but it was like, and that's just a story, you know, tune in next week, and that's how this feels,
right? Yeah and that's ultimately kind of how a lot of the old big like wuxia epics, you know, began, right? Is like and it's the reason why me and my roommates often joke that like you will kind of like the protagonist will stumble backwards into another person's story kind of. And then you get some containment of that. You don't get so much of that in Jackie Chan movies, that stumbling backwards into other people's stories, but like, it still retains a similar structure.
Yeah. Well, I think that's going to be it for this episode. We're creeping toward 2 hours on Police Story. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that's about, that's what I think, what we want to call it. I know it's a fun movie. And it was good talking to you guys. So we'll do our little admin wrap up. Alex, so if you are to be found on the internet, where would that be?
Okay, the one and only good place to find me on the internet is at admcconnell.com. That is my website. It is mostly a blog space right now, but I write novels and things like that. You'll be able to buy those there at some point in the near future, assuming all goes well. You can also sign up for my newsletter where I have musings about things like this.
All right. And Josh, how about yourself?
Oh, for me, you can find me over at the Still Loading podcast. So if you like video games and video game history and my attempt at video game analysis, I invite a bunch of guests on. Jala has been on. Jala's been on Monster Dear Monster, right?
Yes.
Yes, of course. So Jala has been on the show once or twice. I need to get her back on again at some point as well. But I kind of describe it as a gaming grab bag podcast where it's I do a little bit of everything. I have episodes on, you know, deep dive retrospectives on games. I have interviews with people in the industry. I've also done goofy ideas. Dave, I know you're a fan of it, of my Captain N rewatch series, which has now turned into Super Mario Super Show / Legend of Zelda cartoon rewatch series. So we're, you know, me and my buddy Dexter, once a month we watch an episode of one of those old video game cartoons and we break it down in a lot of unnecessary detail
or necessary detail because it's entertaining at the very least. It's good fun stuff.
Thank you. We've always had a lot of fun doing it. And the other weird idea, I always like to shout out the Final Fantasy Fantasy Draft, which is what happens when Final Fantasy and fantasy sports mix. And you don't need to know anything about fantasy sports to enjoy the episode. I promise you, half the guests that I have on for those don't know fantasy sports at all, so you don't need to know it. So yeah, that's the Still Loading Podcast. You can find me at Still Loading Pod on Twitter, Facebook, Threads, Blue Sky, Twitch. At Still Loading Pod and at Still Loading Podcast on YouTube. And this is not for myself, but I want to shout this out. There is a YouTuber named Omar Zaki. He is a Hollywood stunt performer and he does a little bit of martial arts on the side. He did his own Jackie Chan style playground fight. And it's like a 7.5 minute video you can watch on YouTube. And I think it's kind of apropos to what we talked about today. So if you want to see someone pay homage to it's a really good homage to Jackie Chan and his choreography, go check out that video.
All right. Yeah. Send me the link and I'll make sure all of those things appear in the show notes. I'll probably actually include a few other YouTube stunt crews that I'm aware of that the names escape me, but I have them on my bookmark stuff. So just adjacent fun little stunt videos that I think everyone that's listening to this can appreciate. As for myself, you can find me on monsterdeermonster.com. I don't know why I say .com. And the show, we are the sister show to Fireheart Media, which is myself and my wife's podcast network, where there's also Jalachan's Place, and you can find that at jalachan.place. That's it. It's a wrap up for this one. Like I said, it's a bonus episode. There will be more of these forthcoming. This should drop soon, and then sometime in the middle of the month, which is middle of April, there will be an episode on the video game Unicorn Overlord. So look forward to listening to that. All right, folks, I think that's us signing off, and we will catch you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.